Welcome all to a brand new season of Unreal, a podcast about Irish history, stories, and tradition. It's almost time for St. Patrick's Day, and although our opportunities for celebrations and parades are slim in this year of quarantine and plague, it's still a time to think about Ireland and what qualities make us unique and special as a nation. Everyone has a different answer for what makes Ireland uniquely Irish. Strangely, though, one of the things Ireland is most widely known for is actually something it doesn't have: snakes. Irish Catholics learned from an early age the reason for this. St. Patrick, our patron saint, banished snakes from Ireland forever, and none have since dared to touch the land he charmed. But is the story really as simple as that? Or could the legends of snakes, saints, and Ireland's beginnings stretch much further, with many more twists and turns? It's time to take a look at Ireland's strange fascination with an animal it never had, and the saints and heroes who kept them away. I'm Ruth Atkins, and this is Unreal. Snakes have always played a major role in folklore, legends, and religion. They are a uniquely symbolic animal. People read into them what they want to see in their cultures and in the stories they tell. Snakes have a magic about them. And many pagan religions viewed them as having intense and often female powers. In their coiled bodies and shedding skin, they symbolize rebirth, fertility, and renewal. In many stories and legends, snakes are guardians, watching over buried treasure or sacred sites. But their deadly venom and quick, silent attacks have also made them an animal that humans fear and mistrust. And the biblical story of Eve and the serpent has given snakes a darker reputation, one of temptation, cunning, and evil. With the spread of Judeo-Christian mythology, snakes have come to symbolize the pagan knowledge that was being cast aside in favor of a new, unified faith. To banish snakes was therefore considered a heroic, and sometimes even a holy, act. In countries where snakes were a threat, people turned to deities, and later to saints, to protect them from harm. And in Gaelic tradition, for many years, serpents were associated with one saint in particular. And no, I'm not talking about St. Patrick just yet. I'm talking about Brigid. In Scotland, on St. Brigid's feast day, it was said that a serpent would emerge from the ground, and people would sing a hymn in its honour, to calm it, and stop it from attacking them. Early on Brede's morn, the serpent shall come from the hole. I will not harm the serpent, nor will the serpent harm me. The people would also make offerings to the serpent, burning incense and pounding an effigy of it, to protect themselves from stings and bites in the coming year. This fascinating ritual is likely a much older tradition, beginning not with St. Brigid, but with the Gaelic goddess Brede, on whom she is based. Unlike Scotland, Ireland is a land without snakes. This is pretty rare for a country, shared mainly with isolated or island places, such as Iceland, Greenland, and New Zealand. In early Christian times, Ireland had a reputation as a deeply religious place, a land of saints and holy learning. The absence of snakes, and many other reptiles in Ireland, was held up by scholars and holy men as proof of the island's sanctity. Donatus, a 9th century bishop, remarked, "No snakes are creeping there with venomed guile. No raucous frogs disturb the rustling reeds." Many people believed that there was something divine about the very soil of Ireland that made it intolerable to snakes. Gerald of Wales, writing in the 12th century, claimed that the charm was so potent that even if you attempted to bring a snake across the sea, it would die before the ship reached the Irish shore. So, Ireland's lack of snakes has been bound up for centuries with a deep Christian history, pretty much since Christianity arrived in the country. The reasons for our blissfully snake-free existence were always holy ones, always enshrined in our religious origins. But for several centuries, they actually had nothing to do with St. Patrick. Instead, Ireland's lack of snakes was said to be thanks to a much earlier holy snake banisher, Moses. There's an early Irish manuscript called Lower Gabala Éireann, the Book of the Invasions of Ireland. It traces a legendary history of the Irish people all the way back to Israel and Egypt, when Moses and his followers were wandering in the desert. Ireland's people began with a couple, Nell and his wife Scota, who lived on the shores of the Red Sea. When Moses and the Israelites arrived after escaping slavery in Egypt, Nell and Scota saw how little the people had brought with them, and they promised to share their goods with them for as long as the Israelites stayed nearby. Nell and Scota had a son called Gaedil, and soon after the Israelites arrived, Gaedil was attacked by a snake. The snake wound its body tightly around the young child, and everyone feared he would die. In desperation, Nell brought the boy to Moses, who prayed to God and struck the boy with his staff. The serpent was cleft in two, and Gaedil was left unharmed. But for the rest of his life, Gaedil had a green scar around his body, where the snake's poisonous skin had coiled around him. Because of this, he became known as Gaedil Glas, or Gaedil the Green. Moses lay a blessing on this boy, that no serpent would ever harm Gaedil or his descendants again. When he was grown, Gaedil and his family made a long and arduous journey over land and sea, searching for a place that they could call their own. Eventually, his descendants settled in Ireland, so the manuscript says, and when they arrived, they brought Moses' blessing with them. At once, and forever afterwards, Ireland became a land free from snakes and other poisonous creatures. Despite this absence, snakes still found their way into Irish stories and legends. The medieval period brought with it a major trend in stories of legendary battles against monstrous heroes. Worms, dragons, snakes, and serpents were worthy foes for a warrior. And in Britain, tales of King Arthur and the other chivalrous heroes fighting terrifying snakes abounded. Irish heroes were no different. Brian Boru's son Murchad was hailed as a banisher of snakes. The Ulster warrior Cú Chulainn has a particularly grisly story, where he killed a snake by reaching his hand deep into its throat and ripping out its heart. But some of the greatest tales of snake vanquishing belong to the hero Fionn Mac Cool, and his men. In a ballad called The Chase of Slieve Trim, Fionn and his warriors finish a successful hunt, hungry for more adventure. Having killed 2,000 deer and 1,000 boars, and having left every field red with blood, the Fionnists set out to Loch Cuan, where they came across a serpent of a very serious size. As the poem recounts, "Its head was bigger than a hill. 100 horses, though great their fury, might fit in the hollows of its 2 eyes. Greater than trees in a wood its teeth. Bigger than a city's gate were the ears of the serpent waiting us." The serpent tells them that it has come to seek combat with Fionn and the Fianna, all the way from Greece. Fionn bids his warriors to attack, but the serpent proves itself to be a fearsome opponent. It shoots fiery showers of spines at them, and because of its tremendous size, it is able to swallow a hero and his pack altogether. All seems lost when the serpent swallows Fionn MacCool himself. But Fionn, ever the unvanquished warrior, takes his weapon in his hand and cut through the serpent's body to create a door on either side, through which the swallowed Fianna and Fionn himself can escape and finish the serpent off. Fionn's exploits against monstrous serpents, or paisht as they were called in Irish, did not end here. The poem continues, "What fell of monsters by Fionn, till doom may not be reckoned? There was not a reptile in Ireland's glens, but he took by the force of his blows." The blue serpent of the Erne, the monster of Loch Ney, the shining serpent of the Shannon, and the 2 serpents of Loch Foyle were just some of the snakes vanquished by Fionn, who had a reputation for being just as fearsome a foe to reptiles as St. Patrick was to become later. Other members of the Fianna had their own adventures with serpents. Conan, a slightly foolish warrior, made the grave mistake of throwing a woman's shinbone into the waters of Fionnlagh in County Donegal. There, it grew overnight into one of the most fearsome snakes in Irish mythology, the Quirinach. The Quirinach could suck men and cattle into her mouth from a mile away, and soon the local people were forced to offer up cattle in sacrifice to it every single day. When almost all of the cattle in Ulster had been destroyed, and they had to purchase cattle from chieftains in the south to feed the monster's hunger, the people began to threaten Conan for causing them so much difficulty and distress. So, Conan went with his knife to put an end to the Quirinach himself. Just like Fionn, Conan dove deep into the Quirinach's belly and cut his way out through a soft spot in the serpent's side. He swam to the shore, and as the blood gushed from the snake's body, it stained the water and rocks a deep, vivid scarlet, so that, forever afterwards, Fionn Loch has been known as Loch Derg in memory. As for Conan, he didn't escape unscathed. When he swam to the shore, the locals and the Fianna saw that Conan had lost all of his hair and most of the skin of his back from being inside the snake's belly. From then onwards, he was known as Conan Mhaill, Conan the Bald. This legend is an Irish version of a much older Greek tale of Hercules, who rescued Hesione from the belly of a sea monster, losing his own hair in the process. So, it's safe to say that St. Patrick was far from the only snake banisher in Ireland. And lots of tales of the saint's battles against serpents have simply been lifted from earlier stories of chivalrous heroes. But somehow, Patrick's battles with snakes have come to define Ireland as a nation, and the stories we tell of snake banishings rarely feature anyone other than the saint. St. Patrick's story is, in many ways, the story of Ireland itself. It's a tale of captivity, misery, freedom and redemption. Patricius was born in the village of Tabernia in France. Even as a boy, Patrick was reputed to have many divine abilities. He stopped a well from flooding, brought his sister and foster father back to life from the dead, and, before the astonished eyes of his nurse, he made fire come from the ice chips he was playing with, and breathe out flames with his own breath. As he grew up, Patrick turned his attentions to more holy deeds, studying psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. At the time, pirates from Ireland were ravaging the borders of France, plundering villages and kidnapping people to sell into servitude in Ireland. When Patrick was 16 years old, he too was captured. Patrick was sold as a slave to the pagan prince Milko and made to look after Milko's pigs on Slieve Mish. Out on the hillside, with no distractions and only the pigs for company, it's said that Patrick prayed constantly, 100 times a day and 100 times a night, fasting and suffering through the elements. 6 years passed, and Patrick grew to care for the Irish people and speak the Irish language, but he continued to pray daily for his release from captivity. At last, an angel appeared to Patrick and showed him a hole in the hillside that one of the pigs he minded had dug. When Patrick looked into the hole, he found a pile of gold. He brought it to Milko, and with it was able to buy his freedom. Not long after he had returned home, Patrick had another vision. In the dream, he heard the people of Ireland crying out to him to return to them and teach them the word of the Christian God. Patrick knew that this would be his mission in life. He spent the next years in religious learning until he was ordained a bishop and returned to Ireland, ready to bring his faith to the pagan people. Patrick did return to meet his former master Milko a final time, hoping he might be able to convert him to his faith. He succeeded with Milko's 2 daughters, who were baptized and lived religious lives from then on. But Milko was old and bitter and afraid, and when he heard that Patrick was coming, he gathered his possessions and threw them into a big fire, then jumped into the flames after them. Patrick, approaching Milko's dwelling from a neighboring mountain, saw the flames rise high in the air, and suddenly the soul of his master appeared to transform into a fiery serpent plunging into hell. A terrifying sight. Perhaps that is what gave the saint such horror and hatred against snakes.
Bob Patrick was a gentleman and he came from decent people. He built a church in Dublin town and on it put a steeple. His father was a Gallagher, his mother was a Grady. His aunt was in the Shocknessy and his uncle was Paul Brady. The Wicklow hills are very high and so is the hill of Hoth, sir. There's a hill much higher still, much higher nor than both, sir. On the top of this high hill, St. Patrick preached a sermon, drove the frogs into the bogs and banished all the vermin. There's not a mile of Ayrton's Isle where dirty vermin musters. There he put his dear
form. Ireland at the time, so the monk Jocelyn's account goes, was suffering from 3 evil plagues. On earth, evildoers and magicians roam the land. In the air, a great concourse of demons flocked and flew. And, most famously, from the water rose a great swarm of poisonous creatures, including snakes, frogs, and lizards, who wounded men and animals with their stings and bites. This threefold plague was a way for St. Patrick to prove himself, to make the grand gesture needed to win over the people throughout Ireland. So the legends go, Patrick raised his staff and with it compelled all the poisonous creatures to retreat to the high promontory of Cruachan Alga, driving the whole pestilent swarm over the edge of the cliff and headlong into the ocean beneath them. His job not yet finished, Patrick turned to face the Isle of Man and other islands he had blessed and brought faith to the people, and again through prayer banished the snakes and reptiles from these locations also. Many of the evildoers and magicians, having seen this work, were ready to be converted by him. And afterward, Patrick still had the flying demons to deal with. He spent 40 days fasting on a Cruachan, which we now know as Croagh Patrick, so that the creatures he banished might stay gone and the demons leave after them. The whole time he spent up there, the demons tormented Patrick, fluttering around him like birds of the blackest hue, fearful in their form, their hugeness, and their multitude, and striving with their horrible chatterings to prevent his prayer. But as St. Patrick made the sign of the cross, the demons were driven away to foreign lands that had yet to know the word of God. From this moment forward, so it was recorded by monks and in legend, even to this time, all venomous creatures and all fantasies of demons entirely ceased to exist in Hibernia. Many of Ireland's winding rivers are said to have been carved by enormous serpents fleeing the land at St. Patrick's anger. So, St. Patrick gave the snakes an awful twist and banished them forever. But there were some serpents who proved altogether more stubborn to defeat. A lot of the tales of St. Patrick's snake banishing have been adapted from earlier legends I've mentioned, with St. Patrick replacing Fionn and other Irish heroes as the snake battler of the story. And just like Conan Whale, Patrick's fiercest opponent was a terrifying female serpent, the Quirinach. In one of the most interesting legends of St. Patrick's battles with the Quirinach, the serpent spirit manages to escape him and disguises herself by transforming into a beautiful woman. She seduced and married a hermit who lived nearby and bore him two children, a boy and a girl. Eventually, though, St. Patrick discovered the Quirinach's whereabouts and came looking for her. He met the serpent's husband at the door, but the man refused to let St. Patrick in. "I don't know you," the man said, "and my wife doesn't know you either." "You don't know me?" said St. Patrick. "No," said the man. "Well," said St. Patrick, "you don't know your wife either. I'm St. Patrick, and that's the Quirinach you're married to." The man believed him, and he let St. Patrick in. Inside, the Quirinach was waiting. St. Patrick lifted his crozier, and he banished her, in a flash of lightning, into a hole deep in the sea. "But now," said the man to St. Patrick, "what about my two children? Do they have to be killed?" "You would have to look at them to kill them," said St. Patrick. "That would be hard for me to stand," said the man. "Well," said St. Patrick, "there is an easier protection. It's hard for any father to stand to watch his two children die. I will make two dogs of them." "They'll be alive?" asked the man. "They will," said St. Patrick. "Good enough," said the man. And with that, The saint patted the two children on the head and turned them into dogs, the first two dogs to live in Ireland. And that is why it's said that dogs have an evil side and a good side, because one side is with the man who owns them, but the other is always with their mother, the Quirinach, and her evil serpent ways.
You heard of St. Denis of France, he never ridden much for to brag, and you heard of St. George and his lance, who killed the old heathenish dragon. The sense of the Welshman and Scot are a couple of pintyful pipers, might just as well go to pot when compared to the patron of vipers, St. Patrick of Ireland, my dear.
A lot of the folk tales about St. Patrick's battlings with serpents claim that he left some snakes behind. Some of them still hide out in Ireland's lakes and rivers, waiting for the day of judgment when they will be free to slither through Ireland's soil again. Some even say that you can see them if you look closely enough, and that in times of storm, amid thunder and lightning, the serpent rises, riding the waves like a wild horse with a flowing mane. So keep an eye out by lakes and rivers, tread lightly, and watch where you walk, for the age of the serpent may well come to Ireland again. Thanks for listening to this episode of Unreal. I'm so excited to be launching season 2, and I'm delighted to see how many new followers I have since I last released an episode. Welcome all, and looking forward to sharing the history of Irish folklore with you. You can find links to the sources and music from today's podcast on my website, unrealpodcast.com. The theme song is The Butterfly by Schlaunte. Seasoned listeners may have noticed an improvement in the sound quality this time. Míle buíochas to my brother Declan, who got me a microphone for Christmas. Glad to be putting it to use, finally. If you enjoyed this episode and are looking forward to the new season, please consider leaving a review where you listen or on social media. It really helps to spread the word. Thanks to RT11, Ore Poe, and Ricky Patrick, who have done just that. I'll be back soon with a new episode. I think I'm going to lean into this time of sickness and talk about the cures and customs Ireland had in the past for dealing with illnesses. So be sure to tune into that. Until then, Gnairi on Bohr Lat. For paprikas filled it with vermin and snakes and such other things. He was as fine a man as you'd meet from Fairhead to Kilcrumper, though under the sod he is laid. Let's all drink his health in a bumper. I wish he was here that my glass he might by art magic replenish. Since he is not, why, alas, me old song must come to a finish, because all the liquor is gone.